Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie. And we are the Fashion Hags. We love fashion.
And we all work in the industry.
But we don't really get it sometimes.
Hey. Hello, all you millennial fashion lovers. We're back. We're here.
We're sassy.
One third of us is queer.
Yay!
We're the Fashion Hags.
That's us.
Hello!
This is Evan speaking. Say hi to...
Doi.
Yeah. Duh. Say hi to Abby and Katie.
Hi.
Hello. We're back. It's us.
Yeah.
We're pre-recording another episode.
Katie's going on a trip. We need to get in the time machine.
By the time you guys listen to this, I will probably be...
You'll be almost back. You'll be on your way back.
I'll be on my way back. I'll probably be maybe in Utah skiing.
Ooh.
Hopefully I haven't broken my arm or crashed the van or anything like that.
Please don't get hurt while you're in the state.
No. I really don't want to.
Oh,
I have insurance.
Man.
I have insurance.
I was going to say, get the $60 insurance, whatever the fuck it was. Like when I was pregnant and we went to the States, I'm like, get me insurance. I was like 4 months pregnant. I was like, I am not fucking around with this.
No.
America, you're crazy with your shitty
insurance. You're crazy. For a lot of reasons, but that's a big one.
That's another podcast. We have no time.
That's not us. That's not our problem.
What have you been up to, Abby?
I have been up to... The past few weeks, we've talked about what we've been making, and I've been trying to stay on that track and use my hands and my brain and things. And I've just had a couple friends drop off a fuckload of alterations, which is great. And that's just what I've been doing for the last little bit, to just keep my hands busy and keep my head in the game a little bit.
Yeah, that's what happens when you finish fashion school and everyone's like, oh, can you hem my pants?
Yeah.
Can you take in my shirt? Can you
button? Can you sew on a button?
Oh, okay.
But I welcome it.
Yes.
I welcome it because I really enjoy doing alterations. They're fairly straightforward. You can accomplish them fairly quickly. There are a few things that will take you more than a couple hours to do, really, unless you're like rebuilding something, which I also do.
And then everyone is so appreciative.
And that's the thing, too.
Success.
Like I guarantee the vast majority of all you people listening out there, you have a pile of shit in your closet that the hem dropped out of, or you need to hem, or like a button fell off, or there's a small tear in it, or you need a patch when your crotch of your jeans because they're wearing out or whatever, and you just don't wear them and you don't fix them, and then you slowly accumulate 20 things.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened to me. I actually have friends who've gotten off their ass and just brought me like an IKEA bag full of stuff.
Great.
This needs a patch. This needs this. This button's gone. This collar, blah, blah, blah. So I've just been going ham on these alterations.
Nice.
And it's super satisfying because I love fixing things.
And then isn't it the best? I fixed a shirt for Chris the other day.
It's
and
nice. It feels good.
Feels so good when you finish and you're like, I have skills and tools to do this.
Yes.
I just...
And these things are just taking up space in your closet. You're not wearing them.
Yeah.
So it's like shopping your closet and giving yourself all these items back.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just reviving your wardrobe.
You went shopping.
Exactly. And you didn't spend any money. Well, you spend very little money because
You're not doing them for fucking free.
I'm not doing them for free.
Yeah.
But I'm also not, gouging you either. But no, it's been super fun. And I've just been like, I had like a day last week where I was just fucking like just
banging
zing,
them out.
Boom, zing, boom, like just under the machine, gun, under the machine, done. Just like writing up little invoices and totaling things. And it's been super
$80
satisfying.
$80 a button.
Yeah.
$80 a patch.
I don't charge for buttons because I feel bad charging for buttons because part of me is like, oh, you poor.
But I love sewing
buttons. You poor fool. I'm just going to sew your button on. I want to see it. Like, I actually had an idea. I'm like,
can I teach you how to sew a button?
Can I just teach a class on just sewing on buttons?
I bet you could.
That's like a new thing happening. It must be happening in other parts of the country. And I'm sure in the States, too, where you have like a weaving workshop or a candle making
knitting,
or whatever. And it's like a fancy store.
It's very artisanal.
A little boutique.
Which is a word
exactly. That's, yeah. It's super
hashtag artisanal.
Super a la mode here in Vancouver, where you'll go to like a nice store and then you get a little loom and you make a little wall hanging weaving and you have some wine and yada, yada, yada or whatever. I'm like,
yeah,
can
that
I
macrame
just,
stuff is
yeah,
big...
can I just fucking take 60 minutes and show you assholes how to show on a fucking button?
The proper
it's
way.
Not brain surgery.
No.
I don't even care if you do it the proper way.
Yeah.
Just fucking sew it on. Just fucking go over a million times and that bitch will stay on. Tie a good knot on the end, you're good to go.
I love all of the buttons that I do for my brand. I'll have the little post at the bottom.
Oh, yes.
I love that post.
It's so satisfying.
That trick.
Yeah.
Such a good trick.
It's nice.
Yeah.
And they stand away and you can fit the fabric underneath and Yeah.
Awesome.
It takes away, the alterations part takes away from my joy of buttons shopping, because I really enjoy looking at buttons and choosing buttons and matching them, like trying to get the exact pink, or do I go the other way and find something contrasting? You know, I love just going, we have a store here in Vancouver called Dresso, which is just like everything and anything sewing related and crafting and all sorts of things. And they have the most enormous button selection.
Mm-hmm. There are tubes upon tubes of buttons.
And literally millions and millions and millions and millions of buttons. It's nuts in there. Of every color, and a whole bunch of vintage ones and a whole bunch of new ones and plain one and fancy and ugly and beautiful and super cheap and super like $25 buttons and then 5 cent buttons. And
the ones that are vintage are just vintage because they've been there.
They've just been there forever. Yeah. Yeah. Never sold out.
Not for any other reason.
And not because they've been like curated and sought out. They're just sitting on the shelf for 30 years.
There's Button too.
And then there's Button Vancouver here, which is a specialty shop that has buttons. Very specific, curated, beautiful. Very cool. Some of like, them are handmade, one of a kind, and some of them are, you know, from all the parts of the world and made from exotic materials, and they're beautiful. And the lady there is super nice.
Yeah, but it's just around the corner.
So if I'm doing alterations, you just got to sew the same button on. Or it's like a shirt. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just going to take the button that's on the inside tag and just sew it back on the cuff. Yeah. Or just replace. Oh, that's the thing, too. If you're missing a button, you can replace all the buttons. Mm-hmm. If you can't find one that matches, just replace all of them. No, it's amazing how many people don't think of that. I get people coming like, oh, I lost the button. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, it's a one.
Burn it.
Fucking,
you got to burn that shirt. Burn your house.
Sorry, wipe your ass with it. You got to throw it away. I'm like, can you just replace, just buy 6 buttons and just fucking sew them back on? So, very satisfying. Find a tailor. For all you people out there, you don't need to know somebody. Just go to the mall.
Yeah.
They have great people. Like, there's some Russian ladies here at Oak Ridge. I think they're Russian, at least. Some lovely Slavic ladies.
Slavic. European.
Yeah. Yes. Eastern European
at the very
ladies
least.
At Oak Ridge, who do wonderful work. And I recommend people there too for more involved things than I necessarily have time or want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also a lot of unemployed fashion students. You're just coming out on Craigslist. I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Come running.
Got a bunch of jeans I need hemmed. You want to help me out? So that's what I've been doing.
Good one.
Catherine, what have you been up to? I almost called you Kathleen for some reason. That's not your name.
That's weird. It's not my name. Sorry. That's okay.
Came out okay, but in my brain I was like, nope.
Oh, that's all right. I get like this every, like this time of the year, every year, I do the opposite of the alterations thing. I go through my closet and I get rid of
just
tons of stuff.
Yes. Purging is my, oh, I love that feeling. Bet.
It's good. I love it. But I also get this thing where I have long, dark, thick, curly hair. Mm-hmm. And this time of year, every year, without fail,
come February,
I'm like, should I cut all of my hair off? All of it. It's too much. I just need a regular, normal haircut. Because
I would
really
think that would
like
be something you would do in the summer, though, you know, like it's hot as opposed to now where it's
like
cold and
get.
Wanna...
But it's like all it's like the season is changing and like everything in the stores is new summer stuff.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
It's just prep. For summer,
I
sense it coming.
And
like, smell when
it in
a
the air.
Sunny day comes out, you're like,
today in Vancouver
it
was
now.
Fucking beautiful.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
There's a little, at least one day every single February you can wear shorts, and today was that day.
Yeah.
As soon as it's done, goes down about 4 o'clock, you're freezing your tits off.
Yeah.
But for like between like 10 a.m. and 3 p.m.,
it's beautiful.
Beautiful shorts weather.
So that was today. So it's like haircut time. I gotta chop it off. And I agonize over it every single year, but I really like my hair. Like, I like
you
it long.
Beautiful hair. It's shiny. It's easy. Lovely.
We've talked
color.
About it. I think we talked about it on the podcast already. That Katie has like genetically perfect hair.
I lucked out.
You won the lottery.
I did luck out. Yeah. I will. Thanks, mom and dad. Actually,
thank you.
Curls were from dad. Wave and color was from my mom. But I every like literally
just chomping
every time,
at the bit to
like,
make an appointment.
So I just need to deal with it. And plus,
sure.
The trip and everything. Like, I gotta get. It's just now, it's like more of a pelt than yeah. So I gotta tone it down. But I just find myself like scouring short hair, short curly hair.
Googling.
Yeah, like how can I pull it off this year? But I never, I mean,
what
I never
celebrity
do
I want to look like this year?
Yeah, who knows? But it happens every year and I don't think I will do it. But the, sure I know the agony it. Of growing it out.
I'm growing my hair out now and it's taking for bloody of it.
I don't think I could do it. It's too much. It's a lot. But so that's what I've been doing is just scouring.
So it's kind of like your obsession too, just like obsessing about
short hair. Oh, it's dumb. Cuts. So I'm going to just go and see if I can get a good cut with my lady tomorrow.
Yeah. If you go, I'm getting my hair cut on Thursday.
Oh, there just you remembered. Have it.
But that's the thing, too. If you just go get your hair cut, just cut off all the dead bits.
Yeah.
Get her to give it a nice blow dry and just feel thin great. Yeah. Cut the bulk down. Because you have super, I did the same thing, too. Like, it's exactly what I tell my stylist. I'm like, cut the dead ends off.
Yeah.
And make me not have a triangle head.
Yeah. Give me,
because it's a fucking thing.
I want half the hair on my head, but I want it to look like I have a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So,
do your magic.
It's all about the illusion.
Yes, exactly.
You'll feel so much better.
Yes. I will.
And then even just getting like the blowout too. It's like, even if you don't cut anything, just wash my hair and blow it out. It's
great. Just make me look pretty when I walk down the street.
Yeah.
And I catch a breeze and it's like, wee.
Yeah.
And walk past the window and check yourself out.
Thank you.
I've been growing out my hair for a bit. And
yeah. Yours is getting long too. Yours is like shoulder long. Level.
Yeah. It's shorter length. It's finally like, it gets like stuck in my shirts when I put like a collared shirt on and I have to do the,
you have to little have fluff. To
flick it out.
Yeah.
You know, or if you've I put a hoodie on.
You've never had long hair before?
Well, not this long. I had, sure. Well, I'm, as we all know, I'm young. I don't know how to say it.
Sure.
But like when I was in high school, like early years, it was like the skater hairdo, like the swoosh. Like I don't
the
know.
Bieber.
The Bieber. The Bieber, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was before Bieber even.
Yeah, it was like shaggy. I just haven't gotten a haircut in 2 years.
I had that hair, but it was definitely not as long as it is now.
No.
No. But yeah, I want long, like Pocahontas share hair. That's my goal.
Sure. Hashtag share hair.
Hashtag share hair.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I got a haircut in the summer, and now I'm just like, oh, if I wouldn't have cut it, it would be like,
oh, shut an up.
Inch
it would,
longer,
I was gonna say it'll
but
be
it
like,
would have, it probably would have split like 2 inches.
Well, that's the thing. You gotta just cut the dead off. It's so good.
Abby's taught me many lessons about hair and beauty and shopping. the three visit rule.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the 3 visit rule?
What is the
if you don't rule? If you can't pull the trigger on something, a item of clothing or accessory or anything. And you visit it 3 times.
It's meant to be yours?
It's meant to be, and you buy it on the third time.
Buy it on the third try. If it's still there.
If it's still there and you still want it.
Still there. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good
one. It's dangerous because then you can just like rationalize.
Anything.
So it's not fail-proof. And you can still like.
That was great for
rack
the days
up your Visa
student
bill,
loans,
right?
Yeah.
But it also makes you more mindful of your purchases, right?
That's true.
It gives you that time to like, oh, do I really need it? Is it missing? From
how would I wear it? What would I wear it with? Yeah. Where would I wear it? Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm. And I used to do it more when I would be like downtown more and I would like be around the stores and I would have the opportunity. Like I would have to make like a huge trip.
Yeah.
Ditch the kid, find the car, go get parking, walk, yada, 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 go get a fancy donut, blah, blah. That's my whole routine I do now. So it's a little bit more involved.
But. So you're saying I should go to the salon 3 times, talk about it 3 times separately.
And if you still want it.
Not get it.
Yeah.
And then come back.
and then that's when you can do it.
When my stylist is like, get the fuck out of here. You've been here 2 times already. You've been here for 45 minutes. Get out.
Looking at yourself in the mirror and Googling, I don't know.
Googling hairstyles.
I don't know.
I've just been flicking through all of your styles on your phone. What do you think? That one? I don't know.
The front of this and the back of that.
Yeah. Business in the front, party in the back? Yeah. Maybe. Is it time to bring the mullet back?
Can I have a party in the front?
What about the back, though? What about the party in the front versus the back?
What,
reverse
what?
Mullet?
Yeah. How does
what do
that
you
work?
Think?
Hairstylist.
Hey, everyone.
Get the
what do you think?
Yeah. Out.
Your picture's next to the door. Do not let this woman in. She's banned from this.
It's
salon.
Just a picture of me on my phone.
On Pinterest, just looking through hairdos.
Your mullet board on Pinterest.
Oh, good times.
Oh, God.
Good times. Well, best of luck in your decision
Thank
and your
you.
Hairdo.
It'll be exactly the same as
always. It'll sure. look great. It'll be the same, just 3/4 of an inch shorter.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 But it'll feel better, I'm sure. But.
Yes.
Oh, well. What's up with you?
Oh, I've just been working on my collection and life and everything. I had a moment last week where I looked at the collection and I hated everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you do.
Yeah.
I was like,
it's part of the process.
This isn't right. Have I talked about this already? Did I talk about it last week?
About last week.
Yeah, but we
finally... You had all these sketches and then you were like, fuck everything! Yeah,
fuck it all. So we finally...
But now you've posted that. You've had to regroup and...
We regrouped.
Resketched.
Resketched. We're back on track. And that is where I am.
Yes. Excellent.
That's where I am. I really have nothing else.
But you're sewing and you're like, you're getting prototypes. And
oh yeah, we're
and
sewing.
You're experimenting.
Yeah. I did, like, right before we started.
Colors and stuff.
Right before we started taping, I was showing Abby and Kitty a look from my show.
Swatches and things.
And some textile manipulation we've been working on.
Yeah,
it's going to be amazing.
It's very different from what we've seen previously, especially like the last two seasons.
There's a new thing hasn't looked at since this first collection. It's called color.
It's called color.
It's called not black.
Yeah. Like last season we had like this like dove gray, like slightly purple.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot. Beautiful.
And that print, the and silk print, dress with the print, that was outstanding.
Yeah. That was pretty big. But yeah, this season we're going.
It's a bit of a departure.
It's a departure.
You're diving right in. I know you're coming over to my side.
Yes.
Right?
Of the spread colors.
Of the equation. Yeah. Excellent. And I'm like, well, you tell me everything. Like,
bounce all your ideas out her. If you want validation, just tell her.
Yeah.
She would go, yes.
We need a marigold. We need a bright crimson. We need a cobalt blue.
Yeah.
A Kelly green.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, best
concept,
of luck
concept,
to you.
Concept, work.
Yes, exactly. And then make it work.
Oh, yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
Tim Gunn and our teacher Alex from school, who we've mentioned multiple times, are constantly in the back of my head. Make it work.
Figure it out. Yeah.
What was our thing in school? We always had a saying. What was it?
I used to say bang it out, but that's the opposite of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just like, if you got a deadline, you just gotta fucking do it. It doesn't matter what you think or how you just fucking make it happen by 5 o'clock.
There are so many things I say, like working with my assistants, like Frankensteining a pattern together.
Oh yeah,
sure. Frankenstein. Yep.
And they're like, "What
and surgery,
fuck are you talking
surgery.
About?" And I'm like, "Oh, that means when you're doing like maybe a dart manipulation and things get a little wonky, maybe you rip the pattern a little bit. Yeah. You just tape that up.
That's what the tape and the other papers for. Just yeah,
you just like
it
you
up.
Just slip a piece of paper underneath and
tape
you just
it
tape it all down.
Tape it down.
We don't have time to trace out another pattern.
Nope. No. Pattern making is literally 50% cutting
reconstruction.
Yeah.
It's tape.
It's scissors and tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I had a little pattern. I was working on it, and there's just so many layers of paper.
I'm
like, I really just need to retrace this out.
Or when you underestimate how wide something's going to be or where the point is going to end up, and then you just have to, like, tape
an extra square
of paper.
Actually, the look that I showed you before we started taping, that was the case. And we have no space in my present studio.
Yeah.
Right.
So we were like moving chairs, pushing a machine out of the way because we had no space to like draft this gigantic skirt.
Oh,
yeah.
Lordy.
But that'll change in a month because I'm moving into a new space.
Yay. Yes. And get some flat space. At the very least, have some floor you can work on if you don't have a big table yet.
Oh, no. I'm going to like Home Depot, IKEA, that
you can
shit.
IKEA hack that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a lovely sewing table that's an IKEA hack, 2 bookshelves and a desktop. Boom. Yeah. Some legs on it.
Nice.
There you go. It's not big, but it fits the space.
Sweet.
I'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
Get a big piece of wood.
So excited.
Some crates or something.
So excited to not draft on the floor. Or
a table.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst on your back.
Yeah. And I'm
terrible.
I'm not super tall, but I'm relatively tall. So like
bending
over a table for like 4 hours of drafting is not fun.
No, that's no good.
But I digress.
Yes, exactly.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Let's move from talking about drafting on the floor to what does luxury mean?
Yes. So we thought we'd after...
Yeah, what's the best segue for IKEA hacks to luxury?
So we were thinking after the couture episode a few episodes back and just talking about what it means to be couture and then trans... Because that's part of the luxury market, even though couture is a very small part of it and a very specific arm of that part of the fashion world. The luxury... item, and that's accessories, clothing, makeup, watch, whatever, everything that's super expensive and fancy schmancy is luxury, and it's everywhere, and it's exploding, and it's all people talk about, and it's all people want to look at, and so, but then it's also very far away from our daily existence.
Yeah, it's not what you're going out to buy when you need a new t-shirt.
New. Or, you know, a new bag, or what, a new pair of shoes. This is not, you know, a lot of people probably don't even know where people buy these things.
Yeah.
If you live in a town that doesn't have a Neiman Marcus or a Saks or a Holt Renfrew or whatever, like, where would you even find a Celine bag? Yeah. Let alone the money for a Celine bag. That's $5,000. So there's that. So, like, accessibility and what people think of it, but then also what justifies a $5,000 handbag?
Yeah, how do you
negotiate that? How do you write your costing sheet and get $5,000 at the end? Yeah. What numbers do First you input all, in your Excel spreadsheet to get $5,000?
You start with the name Celine.
Mm-hmm. That's $2,500 right there.
Most of it.
Yeah.
In most cases, that's most of it. So, like, when you look at even when you go to the runway shows and fashion weeks and stuff, the Dior, the Givenchy, the
Fendi,
Chanel, like all of the names that you see of all of these shows that go down, those are all luxury brands. Most of the time, the stuff that is being purchased to line the pockets of those brands is not clothing.
Yeah.
It's perfume. And perfume is huge.
It's amazing how much you look at all these brands like Jean Paul Gaultier, Dior, Chanel, mm-hmm. Burberry. They have like the money that they are getting, the revenue that they are getting from perfume alone.
Is massive. It's a huge part of their bottom line.
And that funds the rest of what they do.
Yeah, like look at Jean-Paul Gaultier. He is not doing ready-to-wear at all.
Yeah.
And so he's just showing a couture collection. So how on earth can you afford
to what's a business model of that?
It alive. There's only one way.
In 2015.
There's only one way, and that is perfume and...
Or makeup or whatever else they have.
Does Gaultier
stuff like
do
that.
Makeup?
I don't know if they do a makeup line.
I think they only do fragrance.
No. But then people like Marc Jacobs, who has a very prominent perfume line, just launched a makeup line that they were selling at Sephora. And now they're going to be selling Neiman Marcus, maybe? And then also online. So they're now expanding
into a higher market.
Because the Neiman Marcus customer is very different than the Sephora customer. And then they're widening their product offerings. So obviously it's doing well if they're expanding and, you know, getting deeper into it. Because Marc Jacobs just stopped doing Marc by Marc.
Right.
That doesn't exist anymore. He's not working for Louis Vuitton anymore.
Yeah. So I wonder if
he... So he's just Marc Jacobs now, and that's the only brand he has.
Well, I wonder if it's a sign of his success in that line, or if it's a sign of
trying to figure something out because it's not working.
Kind of scrambling. Like,
yeah.
We know this is going to make money. Let's do this so we can fill our bottom lines to launch another
line. And keep the brand afloat.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's name's on fucking everything. I know in this town. You can't throw a rock and not hit Marc Jacobs' purse.
Literally.
From Maurizio, yeah. Also, his Instagram is amazing.
Also, his dog, outstanding.
Also amazing.
His dog's Instagram, amazing.
He had this whole thing over, I don't know if it was New Year's or Christmas or just like that whole sort of
holiday-ish. Yeah.
Some of the gayest Instagram posting I have ever seen was on Marc Jacobs. They had a GoPro thing on a drone, just like this sea of svelte, tanned, ripped,
beautiful
gay men in the middle of, you know, Southern California or Mexico, wherever the hell they were.
Pretty sure it was like what's it called? Palm Springs.
Could have been Palm. I thought they might have been on the ocean. Anyway, just
I think they might have been in like Saint Tropez or
something. It was just
spectacular.
Like
Saint Lucia or something.
Bart's.
That's where they all go.
Yeah.
Anyway, check it out. Go back 14 weeks. Yeah. Check out his Instagram.
Check out Marc Jacobs.
It's worth it.
So, but yeah, it's an interesting. You see these brands put on these huge fashion shows for couture, and then you see how much work and money goes into these couture shows versus how much they're actually selling of these things.
Yeah,
and then you wonder like, what's their bottom line? And then you're like, oh yes, yes, a whole bunch of Chinese ladies wearing perfume.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's your bajillion dollars right there.
A million bags being sold.
Yeah, purses. And that's the thing with Dior, too. Like, their purses and stuff, they're super popular. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, like, those Fendi baguette bags that were all over the place. And, like, the era of the it bag. Like, there was, for a long time, there was, like, the Birkin bag.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and the Kelly bag, like the two Hermes bags. And that was like the bags that everybody knew about. And now there's the Chloe Paddington. It, yeah. There's the Celine, whatever one, the square one with the wings. And I don't even know, I don't know the names to all of them, but there's so many recognizable
the PS1
it bags. Yeah. All the, I mean, the Louis Vuitton ones, the Speedies, the carryout, whatever, the Neverfulls and stuff. Mm-hmm. Those have been around forever and ever. But there's so many brands now that have
and Hermes bags. And Louis Vuitton are interesting because those are
ancient brands.
They're ancient brands.
In this grand scheme of things, they're 200 years old.
And they started
famous for leather.
Yeah, they started as leather and
luggage
and like Hermes started as like saddle wear as
well. Horses and that sort of gear.
And so like one, I mean, they both put on shows every year for clothing, but like I wonder how much of their clothing actually goes anywhere. Hermes at least. I know they make a shitload of money off of their scarves. Their scarves are pretty iconic and pretty desirable in terms of a luxury item.
Yeah.
And again, that's something that you can pay a couple hundred dollars for and get a beautiful silk scarf that, you know, that welcomes you to this luxury club that you can
get like your foot in the door a little bit.
Yeah. When you're not going to go and buy a $20,000 Kelly bag. It's never going to happen, but you can... I mean, for some of it, it might, but who knows? But it's never happened for me, that's for sure.
That's neither here nor there.
But you can get it. And that's the thing, too. Like, there's so many of these brands. Overall, there are more what they call high net worth individuals. Like, there are more super rich people now than ever before. If the X amount of people making X amount of millions of dollars a year, there's more of those than have ever existed in human existence. So the possibility of people spending large amounts of money on items is bigger and is higher than ever. So these brands have to keep producing the same ones and then also new ones. And then they also have to keep raising their prices.
Yeah.
To keep their quote luxury prestige, right? To keep their status.
Add more luxury. Exactly. Items that and are add more luxury.
And, but then they also have to keep the keychains and the coin purses
and the
lipstick case or whatever bullshit thing you want to spend $600 on Louis Vuitton. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
So, but they also have to keep that because they also want to keep the people who can't afford it to still aspire one day to buy it.
Yeah. So
they want to get that tiny little bit of that brand.
Yeah.
Through the perfume, through the keychain, through the whatever.
Yeah.
Through
the jewelry. Find the $20,000 Kelly bag. You could probably afford a little keychain.
For Christmas, your boyfriend gets you a keychain or whatever. And it's adorable and you love him forever and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, so it's weird when you think about like when you watch a Dior show or Chanel show or a Fendi show or whatever, and you're like, who's actually buying this? Not a lot of people, turns out. Probably in most cases, more people are buying the stuff that you find at the Bay or Neiman Marcus and the makeout counters.
I don't know where you shop.
You guys haven't been to the makeout counter?
The makeout counter for Chanel at the Bay?
You just go and make out. You pay your money. It's like a kissing booth.
Does Katie know like a new cruising spot that I'm unaware of?
I know I've been out of the game for a while, but
maybe
that's
where
I'll find my boy.
I know what we're doing this weekend.
We're going to go linger at the Chanel counter at the Bay and
see what happens.
Find me a husband.
And then get your face done. Get your freshly fucked face.
Get my freshly fucked face a Canique. We'll take a selfie and we'll post it. Don't worry about it. It'll be fun.
These brands are, have to offer a wide selection of things. And then I was reading this article in the Business of Fashion about the increase in prices for things.
Right.
So in 15 years, the price of a Kelly bag, an Hermes Kelly bag, has gone from $4,800 to $7,600.
Oof.
In 15 years, that's like 60%. Manolo Blahnik, back when Carrie Bradshaw bought them, were under $500. Now they're closer to $1,000.
Oh, God.
Yes, there's inflation and this the cost of materials and labor and real estate and, your sales force and stuff. Yes, that has all gone up. So, but the inflation rate for luxury goods is double what just regular inflation is.
Weird.
Which is weird.
Would that be constituted to the fact that the markup on luxury goods is higher than that of a normal product?
Interestingly enough, they mentioned in this article, I think in this article, they talked about how these brands now especially after 2008 when all of the bottom fell out of the economy, right? And people all over the world had to bounce back. The sale and outlet market is now huge. And there's right. more people looking for sales. Granted, I remember going back in the day getting better sales, like the prices being better at the markdowns. Like I remember getting like Michael Kors shoes at Holt Renfrew for like $60.
Really?
Oh yeah. God. And they're amazing. They were like maybe $250 to begin with, and I got them for like $69, you know, $75 or something.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and now there is no way that would ever happen.
No.
So now the brands now have to anticipate this markdown by elevating the full price to then give the illusion of a bigger markdown and still be able to make money.
Yeah, so they just inflate their own prices and their own markup.
So when they're giving you, quote, 40% off, you're really getting like 25% off.
Yeah.
And the grants, if you're looking at over the last 20 years as opposed to in the last 5. So they can still make a profit on the markdown. They're not just liquidating stock, like, because that's essentially what sales are, right? They just need to literally physically make room in the stores for the new stuff. They still need to make money off the stuff. Before, you were probably able to cut a loss more of the markdown stuff.
Yeah.
And not have to make such a big, as big a profit on the markdown stuff, because you would get full price stuff too, but less people are buying full price stuff, so they're looking for markdowns, so then they have to inflate the price to get the markdown and yada, yada, yada,
yada, yada. And I wonder how much of that, like, that sort of rejigging of that.
Yeah, playing with those numbers.
Yeah, that formula or whatever. I wonder how much of that has to do with the inflation, or if that has to do with the fact that, you know, there might be, like you said, there's a bigger gap now. Like there's more people buying luxury stuff than there ever have been before, but there's also a huge
population
who are not. The vast majority of the population cannot afford those things.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's an attempt to make the profit more upfront. And
as opposed to trying to get it all the way
kick
through.
Kick it out in the end. Like, I wonder if it would work better if prices were lowered a little bit and then you move through that stock and then it doesn't have to go to that sale price.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I remember I interned at Holt Renfrew very briefly.
La-dee-da.
La-dee-freaking-da. Just in the alteration. Like, I hemmed jeans. That's all they let me do was hem jeans. But in their alteration studio. And I had like a little, it's a big corporation and stuff, so there's staff meetings and things. And I remember them talking about how they had to push full price.
Yeah.
Because they will not be offering sales. Or they will not be offering the same sales. So the sales staff was encouraged to push full price stuff as much as they could, because they just, and this was like 2011.
But isn't that always the case?
Isn't that like doy? Like, yeah, of course you need to sell it full price.
Yeah. But they were like really,
yeah,
really like stressing the fact
that don't wait around to make your sales and your commission for sale time.
And if people start talking about when are the sales coming, you say, you better buy this now.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to go on sale, or it won't be here, or yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, that's weird, because when you think about it, all of those companies from, you know, your little corner shop to Holt Renfrew, they all have to buy their product
they
from somewhere else.
They own their stock.
Yeah, so it's not on consignment or whatever, right? Or, you know, they have to buy it and then...
Yeah, so everything comes with two prices. The suggested retail price, which is what it sells for when you go into the store and buy it, and the wholesale price, which is what the store buys it from the brand for.
Yeah.
So there's a markup built into both.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know...
You're not going to make money.
Chloe has to have a markup to get their wholesale price because they still didn't make a profit. And then Holt Renfrew needs to have a markup on that price too, because they also need to make their cut and cover their overhead and everything else, right?
It's crazy when you have to like look at the math of like, okay, this bag costs $5,000. What is it made of? If it's made for me, if it's made of anything other than leather,
top quality leather,
a nice leather, I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, no.
I'm straight up not going to buy it. Yeah. If it's a really nice, you know, repurposed, you know, veggie friendly, vegan something, Stella McCartney, I'm not fucking buying it.
No.
If I throw this into a landfill,
I don't care what your name is. Yeah.
Yeah.
This better decompose into nothing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like what validates these prices, right? So there's the side of it that's the craftsmanship, the unbelievable raw materials you start with. Like, my husband has this obsession with these fancy shoes.
Tap dancing shoes?
They're super fancy. Oh my God, you imagine Dave tap dancing? That'd be amazing. I'd be super
I can only imagine it in cartoon form.
Yeah.
But it's just like one of those ones that's just like super straight from the shoulders up
and then the legs going down, crazy.
The legs are going crazy.
I imagine like a cartoon version of Dave a la, like, For Better or Worse comic strip, but tap dancing. With white gloves on.
I can picture his stupid looking face too while he's doing it. Anyway, Dave has this obsession with these, and it's a type of leather that many brands use. It's called, I'm going to say it wrong now, Cordoban leather. It's a type of horse leather that makes very high quality, beautiful men's shoes. These are the type of shoes that will literally last you your whole life. You can get them resold if you needed to, just from wear. But the top part of the shoe, if you take care of it, if you treat it, if you shine it, if you take care of it, will last you forever. They're beautiful. When they wear in, they are also beautiful. It's not like when you wear them in and they get a little discolored. No. The patina is beautiful. You get them in amazing colors. They're all naturally dyed. It's fabulous. He has a couple pairs of boots. One pair of boots he literally waited a year for. Because the horses have to die of natural causes.
Oh, shit.
They don't kill horses for it. Or use the horse skins from a byproduct of another, you know, on a horse meat industry in France or something, because they eat a bunch of horse in France.
Right.
I'm super grossed out. But that's the thing. Like, these horses live long lives and they are treated extremely well.
Yeah.
For their entire lives to then pass away in their sleep gently.
And then you get a sweet
pair. And then you get a sweet fucking pair of boots.
That will probably last longer than the horse was alive for.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. So on the one hand, these shoes are hundreds of dollars. First of all, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
They're very classic. Like, he's got a pair of brogues and he's got a pair of like army boots. Like, they're very classic. You can wear them every day. You can wear them with jeans. You can wear them with a suit. Doesn't matter. Classic pieces. And they will last forever because they are made with quality. They're constructed impeccably. And, you know, all 5 stars.
And the other thing that's interesting when you think about the luxury market, speaking about this, is like, if you look at, like, what brand did he buy them from? Like, is it a specific brand that he...
Alden is the brand.
Okay.
Yes.
So Alden is not a company or a brand that you're going to hear about in Fashion Week.
No.
It's not going to have the runway shows in Paris. You're not going to see Dior, right? No. So there's sort of two sides to it. And I'm always way more in favor of the side that's this
more artisanal, historic prestige as opposed to fancy.
Well, it's also a smaller private. Well, I don't know if they're private or not, but it's a smaller.
Not as visible corporation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not employing, you know, many thousands of people in whatever varying conditions around the world to make these products that are, I mean, and lots of times a part of fast fashion. Luxury is still part of fast fashion. It's still, it's part of that same system,
mm-hmm.
You know, despite the price tag.
Hopefully, it's all the same steps. And
hopefully it's better than the shit you're buying at H&M and shit like that. But I'm way more in favor of supporting these smaller brands who are taking the care to raise these horses or, you know, check up on that kind of stuff. And
or have relationships with these ranches or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And who are charging a premium for their product because their product is premium.
Yeah.
Not because it has a Dior stamp on it.
And that's the thing, too. Like, yes, there's the artisan, like, you watch these videos like we talked about in previous episodes of.
Like the
bags.
The Savoir Faire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Savoir Faire videos where you watch a shoe being made or you watch a Chanel 255 bag being made or whatever. And it's
that's how
beautiful.
I learned how to make a saddle stitch for my backpack. Hermes.
Yeah.
You want to learn from the best. That's on
the channel and figuring it out. But then you're also paying for the label. You're paying for the name and you're paying for the desirability and the, you know, aspirational quality of the lifestyle that it represents, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And that is a huge percentage of what that price is.
You're
entails,
literally buying
right?
into that life that they've spent so much money and so much time and so many brains have
crafting
gone towards
and
crafting
creating
that.
And,
yeah, especially with something like Chanel and Dior, and like they've taken like when you think about Dior, like the Christian Dior was only at the helm of his brand for less than a decade.
Sure.
And then it's grown to be this like historic fashion brand.
Yeah.
And it like, just like that handwriting that someone was able to instill for that such a short amount of time has.
That they've been able to.
They've really
expand
grabbed and, that onto yeah. that and expanded it and made it into something crazy. Because there's all, we know historically there's a lot of fashion brands that have the same kind of story, but they.
And were around at the same time and made the same kind of thing. But they didn't have the same
yeah. longevity.
Yeah.
And like Chanel too.
Yeah.
Like you look at Coco Chanel and where she started out and like her whole thing. And look at 90s Chanel. They couldn't be farther
yeah.
from
yeah.
from Coco's
Well, present day
vision.
Chanel. Yeah.
Even present day Chanel. But like 90s supermodel era
yeah.
Chanel, like that kind of, in
fancy,
my opinion,
glitzy,
a little gauche
yeah,
kind
yeah, yeah,
of
yeah. Yeah.
labels on top of everything. Like the emblem was everywhere.
Yeah, I used to work at a vintage
that
store.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there was a huge trend back in the day of, I mean, look at the Fendi baguette bags that had the big fucking giant Fs on it and the Chanel everything. Yeah, exactly. The Louis Vuitton logo on the LV, everything, and the little monogram all mm-hmm. over the place. And now the pendulum is swinging the other way.
Where people want things that don't look like it's from anywhere in specific.
Yes, and they want a teeny tiny little label, or maybe an inside, maybe nothing on the outside, yeah. or maybe the hardware has a little
yeah,
and it's even
interlocking
the,
C on
the,
it.
It's on the zipper pull, you see yeah, a little
a little whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and it's even more, arguably, it's even more exclusive because you have to know.
Yes,
that,
it's not
yeah.
boom,
that bag is that bag.
A Louis Vuitton bag.
It's like, oh, if you don't know.
That also has a lot to do with society and like you're saying
and
right
marketing.
Now. And marketing. It has a lot, like right now, luxury has a lot to do with the story and the heritage of a brand. And people want to know what they're buying and where it's coming from. And
yeah, that transparency
yeah,
is important.
The brand transparency is so important, incredibly important. But in like,
and should be. Do your
exactly.
research.
I when I go to look at a brand or something, if I'm going yeah. shopping, the first thing I look to, if after finding it, like the specific thing I'm looking for, if I'm just doing research on a brand, I always go to like the About Us page.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What's your story? What's your deal? Where are you from?
And
you doing?
Like, how are you writing it? How are you yeah. saying it? Like, what,
yeah, what language
are
you using?
Using? Yeah. So if you're talking to me, then I'm going to be more supportive. If I can see through your shit, then I'm like, oh, I'm not going to.
You're full of crap. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
Where was I? I was on fire there for a
while. Oh, you totally stepped on it.
Yeah, like, but that brand transparency is so important. And then some, like, when you could look back to when everything had a label on it, everything was crazy. It was like
the Versace,
the Paris Hilton
Oh my God, yes.
Like, when celebrity and like being famous for nothing was
really
like,
giving
up. When it started.
That, it's like, it has a lot to do with society. And now you can see the customer.
And the economy was booming
exactly.
and you wanted people to know you spent all this money, and now it's a little bit more key. You don't want necessarily to be walking around with the
exactly
$40,000 purse.
I know that I
back
have
in the day, you know.
I have worked in retail and I've had customers come in carrying, you know, a $6,000 Louis Vuitton
handbag.
And like asking for a deal on it. You're carrying a fucking Vuitton bag. Like, I'm not
I'm not gonna give you pet peeve.
You're not going to get a discount on this. I'm sorry. If you want to negotiate terms,
yeah.
bring in a paper bag. Like,
yeah.
you know, if you want
don't
me to.
Don't go throwing your weight around.
Yeah, like, come on.
The other day,
fucking Rolex.
The other
like,
day
whatever.
At work, I mistakenly, this girl was transferring money and I mistakenly saw her bank balance, which was fucking insane. Like, more than my student loan.
Sure. Like,
more than the negative of
and
student
she,
loan.
Exactly. Like, and I was just like, and her total wasn't crazy, but she's like, can you take like this and off? And I was like, oh my
Are
god,
you
there's
kidding?
Like five people behind you. Can you just fucking decide? And you can just come back and return it, please. Just like
let me ring it through and get
just,
through this.
Just get out. And you're carrying a Dior, like the Dior bag with like all of the like the stitch work on it and like the little dangly and like the wood like the. This little, tiny little strap. I don't know what it's called. You know
sure,
what?
It's a fancy fucking
That
curse.
Fancy window yeah. pane looking door bag.
Yeah.
I think it's fucking ugly.
Sure, well.
Quite honest, but.
Money can't buy taste.
Exactly.
Put it that way.
Oh my God, that's not the definition of luxury. I don't know what.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so I think this is a good segue into what was the catalyst for me wanting to talk about what constitutes luxury.
Oh, yes.
Is this surgeon's, this. I don't know this.
So
thing
yeah, there's
of brands.
Many. There's many things that deserve the price.
Luxury, like
yes.
an Hermes
and the moniker of
yeah.
luxury
a Chanel
item.
Jacket,
the 255 bag,
yeah.
which is icon. The little quilted leather Chanel
yeah.
bag
with the
with the
chain
love letters.
And the yes, yeah. exactly.
So cute.
It's beautiful.
It's stunning.
Perfection. Yes.
But now, I feel like luxury has, in the attempt, I think, to make luxury more democratic, it's kind of been bastardized. And that's the only word that I can think of.
Just like we were talking about the couture, but people just slapping that name on anything because they want to get it, they want to get in on the name, they want to get in on the prestige, and they also want to justify these bullshit prices.
Without doing their homework.
Without actually doing their homework or the craftsmanship or you know, the design. And that's the thing too, like you're not paying for the labor and the materials, you're also paying for the brain power.
Yes.
And the thousands of prototypes they had to do beforehand.
Yeah,
the dress didn't come out on the third try looking like that. They made 20 of those dresses before they got that right.
Yeah.
You know? So you're paying for that too. You're paying for all the failures.
And probably 20 people made that dress 20 times.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that justifies the price in a lot of senses. And then these other yahoos coming in here charging $400 for a fucking t-shirt. Kanye West looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Victoria Beckham is also guilty of a lot of that. Overpricing.
Overpricing and underdesigning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, for the first few years of Victoria Beckham's design, and on the one hand, I really like her designs in many cases, but for the first few seasons, it was just a Roland Mouret dress again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That somebody else had been doing for 10 years.
Yeah.
Or the bandage dress from Hervé Léger that everybody and their fucking brother was doing, like, I don't know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and then you get it at Le Chateau for
and you go to BB and it's right there, yeah.
Yeah, BCBG, anywhere.
Yeah.
You can get that dress at like five other stores.
So there's that.
Yeah. So like...
There's more than just the name on the label.
Like brands like the French brand Vetements, which has for some reason been lauded by the fashion industry at large.
Yeah, it's really taken over. It's really popular.
Just like within that, I don't know, this kind of subculture within the fashion industry... I don't get it, but they feel like they can get away with selling a hoodie, like a hoodie
just
sweatshirt,
a hoodie. Yeah.
With a graphic on it for like close to $1,000.
Yikes!
Gross.
Yeah.
What's on it?
Is it
a picture of the Prophet Muhammad? Like, what's going on here?
No, it's
like that Andy Warhol print or something.
I feel like
or
what I
Henri Matisse painted paint or something. Yeah.
No, it's like it's literally a screen print of the word Vetements.
Oh,
and
great.
I feel like it's an homage to it's the skate brand, it's like Slasher or something.
Oh fuck, I know the one you mean.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Slayer? No.
No, that's the band.
I know what you're talking about though. I can see the logo.
It's an homage to it. And like everyone in there, like all of the kids in the scene. I call it the scene because I'm older than everyone when I go out, which is a weird thing because I'm not old.
You're like 15 minutes older.
But like we go out when we go out, like we went for my birthday, we go to like a nice like nightclub. But when I go, it's like a shitty warehouse in the middle of nowhere and everyone there is like 16 years old and I'm like and everyone's wearing it's Slasher I think it's called.
I think so.
Yeah. That rings a bell.
Yeah, Slasher hoodie.
Like, picture Kanye West wearing it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Thrasher. Is it Thrasher?
Thrasher. That's what it
Thrasher.
Is.
Thrasher.
Yep. Yeah. We're super into the skate scene, guys, if you didn't realize.
I know, like
and the thing is though too, like there's that whole thing of
but that hoodie is it's not insanely expensive. It's accessible. And I think Vetements is trying to get off of that brand and try and but like charging close to $1,000 for a hoodie is just
obscene.
Unless that hoodie is handmade and it's cashmere and it's like a beautiful silk screen print on the front, then maybe. There's a story behind it, then give me the story. But
I'm looking at a pair of Vetements stirrup pants.
Yes.
So that's first of all, there's that. Just let that percolate for a second. Stirrup pants.
And they I had Vetements. My shirt.
Oh my god, yeah, circa 1991. Absolutely.
Oh my god.
But it's essentially like the Everlast logo.
Yeah.
Like the boxing logo on a black pant on the thigh.
Well, it's that whole thing of street culture of like it used to be top down.
It's getting regurgitated in the other direction.
Yeah. So it used to be the top down kind of trickle down kind of thing. And then for a while, like in the I guess it was like
even Tommy
the
Hilfiger.
80s, well, it would be the trickle up. It would be like designers would look into the street and see what was happening in street culture.
Yeah, what are the people wearing? And then that would then go the other way. Marc Jacobs did that whole grunge collection in the 90s. That was a huge deal.
It's been it's been happening for a long time.
Yeah.
And it has sort of blurred the lines
but
of
I think
where
the
that
difference between now and then is when high-end designers took their inspiration from the streets. They gave it the luxury touch.
And they gave it their own spin. Exactly. They weren't just copy-pasting it like some of these
There's a lot of copy and pasting happening
it
off. Right now.
Oh, yeah, trust me, I'm not defending that. I'm just saying this is a weird blurred line of, again, it's because they have this name, Vetements, they have this clean website, and they're the talk of town.
And they're in Paris and blah, blah,
blah. I mean, whatever it is, whatever branding they were able to do.
Quite honestly, I think it has a lot to do with their branding.
Absolutely.
Their branding is on point.
Yeah. They're making it work. They figured out
completely
algorithm and
they're
maximizing profits.
They're going for what I like to call, like, since we're in Vancouver, I call it the Emily Carr art kid with money.
Yeah. Emily Carr is a very prestigious art school here in Vancouver. Yeah.
And that's this is how these kids dress, and they look great. They look cool, but they shop at a thrift shop, and maybe every now and then they'll wear like an expensive piece.
I know, and we had to look like that when we were growing up. We had to legitimately go to thrift stores.
Like literally, I'm looking at this image from Vetements, and these kids look like the kids that I see at the warehouse parties on the weekend, and they all go to Emily Carr, and they look cool, but no one is paying $1,000.
Yeah,
for their hoodie,
sweater. Yeah,
no one's paying $800 for their like reconstructed
a pair of track pants or whatever. Yeah,
there's a company in Japan, and I am going to forget it, and I will find it, and I will link it on the blog because it's not happening right now. But they have a technique of knitting their jersey, their like terry fabric that they do for their sweatshirts and sweatpants and stuff, and they essentially knit it in pieces, where like if you go out and buy a bolted jersey fabric, it's just a big
rectangle
stretcher fabric,
or
right?
A tube sometimes. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a tube. Yeah. So this company has this technique of knitting their fibers into this fabric that is in this shape to create the clothing out of it, which is
you get a sleeve shape, you get a front shape, you get a hood shape. You don't just cut a hood out of a flat piece.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, which is how lots of knit pieces are made now anyways, but the technique that they have is like, it sort of goes back in on itself. So it's super durable. It's like it's like the canvas of jerseys, basically.
Sure.
So it's really robust. Heavy duty.
Sure.
It'll last, you know, a long time. And you can buy a hoodie online from this company for, you know, $170 or so.
Sure.
And it'll last you for 25 years. Like,
because it's made to last.
Because it's made to last. So if you can get a hoodie of that quality where they aspire to achieve that level of quality for $200, don't go to
these assholes.
Like, don't do that. Like, there's so much of the luxury industry that I have just straight up never understood.
That's the hoodie I'm talking about.
Oh, oversized logo hoodie. Suck a bag of dicks. Fuck off.
Also, that's a bad
I feel really
design.
Bad because Marshall, who is the editor of Your Future magazine, has this hoodie and he looks really cool in it. But I can't stand by the fact that a hoodie is being sold for close to $1,000.
It looks super dumb.
Yeah, and it looks dumb.
It doesn't.
You're dumb. You're dumb.
Your sleeves?
It looks dumb on this model because
sleeves shouldn't go to your knees. Sorry.
Sleeves to your knees.
It's like orangutan cut here. It's the new cut, the orangutan. Move over, skinny. The orangutan. The new look.
Just gonna have
20. Is this the new look for? It's like the Dior new look, but
yes, yeah.
It's the orangutan.
Oh, God.
It's when you go to take a sip out of your $9 latte,
I'm done with fashion.
You've got your fashion. Sleeves up to your
arms. Devin's throwing up his hands.
Oh, I'm throwing in the towel,
man. Well, that's the thing too. Like, there's lots of other brands. Like there's a brand called Common Projects that I remember Aziz Ansari was talking about because he wore it in his Master of None show, and Aziz Ansari, it's a bit of a clothes horse, and there was a whole bunch of blog posts. He did a bunch of interviews about all the clothes he wore on that show. He looked awesome on the show. If you haven't watched Master of None, it's a great show, Netflix. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Aziz is cool.
But these Common Project sneakers, they're like Stan Smith's, which is like the most basic of sneakers. Great. They've had quite a big fashion resurgence in the last little bit. They've been around for, who knows, for decades, right? These basic tennis shoes. I had them in like junior high, and I thought it was the shit. But now they're charging like $500. Or Raf Simons did Stan Smith, and they were $400+. And instead of just the three perforated lines on the side, they did a perforated R.
Oh, ooh, shit.
And they're done in like exclusive colorways, like a pastel pink and like a neon
they
orange.
They did have a really cool like pebble leather gray. That was really nice. That
I know. I was looking at these like beige, like matte leather ones that they had at a store in Gatsby.
But come on, like you're not.
I know, but we're sitting here talking, but it's still,
the materials are fantastic, but the design itself, you're not reinventing the wheel. Like, yeah. Come on.
I don't know, but let's like.
I'm very two-minded about it. Yeah, you know?
But as a designer as well, it's what we've heard time and again from our instructors and even from Ivan Sayers, who we've mentioned before on the podcast.
Sure, yeah, all these people
there
look
no
up to.
There are no new ideas.
Yeah.
It's all about how you reinterpret these ideas
and then
and
how
give
you
them
market it. And yeah, exactly.
So on the other hand, clearly Vetmaa is doing something right because this product's unavailable on Nordstrom.com. So
they're doing something. And the thing is too, like with these pricing things, you have to pay what these people are worth. You have to pay what the materials, which is obviously the price of leather and cotton specifically, have been skyrocketing in the past few years. But then there's also the side of it that the fast fashion industry has been around for so long that it has totally fucked up our idea of what things cost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you just think, well, I can just get it at H&M for $40. It's a piece of shit. It will fall apart in five washings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yes, you think a sweater or a pair of jeans is worth, you know, $50. So you think, like, buying a pair of jeans for, like, $200, which on the grand scheme of things isn't that much money if you pay upward of $150 for a pair of jeans. But those jeans you get for $150 are amazing and will last you forever and will fit you, if you find the right style, will fit you great. You don't have to go to Old Navy and buy something funky and put a belt on. Whatever, you know.
I like to sort of think about it.
So it's so fucked up that we are this. Yeah,
the like perception when you're of,
so.
Yeah, yeah, how do you value it? So I always try to think of like, and I talked about this when I talked about the Christmas sweaters.
Yeah.
On the blog. If you yourself, just a regular Joe Blow, go and buy a t-shirt and that t-shirt costs $6.95. Think about how you would make that t-shirt. How much time would it take for you to make that t-shirt?
To go to the store,
assuming you have the tools to do it, which you don't have most of the time.
The tools.
Even if you have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've had the fabric and the tools to do it.
The fabric alone's like $8 a meter retail.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So like you make that shirt and see how much it costs when you make it. You're going to have a different idea of how to evaluate what things cost. And hopefully you'll have a different idea of how you spend your money because you shouldn't be paying.
And
that
the thing
for
is too, if
thing,
you make
right?
yourself a t-shirt, you're paying for the fabric and you're paying for you to make it.
Yeah.
If you buy a store-bought shirt for one item of clothing, there's 100 people who had something to do with it. So you are taking that $6 and dividing
and
it by 100.
It. Yeah. Exactly.
And then each one of those people has to somehow make a living off of this.
Yeah.
So then when you flip around and you look on the luxury side of things.
Yeah. And you take that $5,000 price tag.
You can, in some cases, take almost that same t-shirt. Probably the fabric is going to be a bit nicer. Well, definitely it'll
I should
be a
hope
bit nicer.
So.
Yeah. The cut will have more interest.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The fabric will be nicer. The construction will be better. It'll be a little bit, you know, better put together for sure.
There'll be more time put into it.
But you slap a Dior label on that, and the price of that goes from $6.95 to $200.
Yeah, easy.
With like an upgrade on the fabric, an upgrade on
the labor
and stuff for sure. Like your shirt's going to last longer for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not going to last, you know, 800 times longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what essentially just do the numbers.
So the tricky part
that's
is finding
thing.
That in between.
<That's> another,
find that balance.
That's another thing I struggle with is when people buy something, they expect it to last forever. It's like clothing is a physical object.
We have that idea of the fast fashion price, but then we still have the old school idea of you having it for 20 years.
Yeah.
But they are irreconcilable, those two things. There is no way a $15 hoodie is going to last you more than 18 months.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
Something's going to happen.
Something's got to happen. Yeah. So, and the labor thing's interesting too, because you look at high priced items and like I said, the price of everything is going up. So high quote, fancy schmancy labels like Michael Kors still made in China.
Yeah.
Sell those, them in malls.
Those Italian bags are not made in Italy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, back in the day when we were growing up, made in China equaled crap.
Yeah.
Right? Because that was low prices, it was low quality, yada, yada, yada. It was just, you know, cheap. Whereas now,
it's a blur.
Even labor line. In China is getting more expensive, and the cost of the materials is getting more expensive, and shipping costs and gas costs are getting more expensive to get it back and forth across the continent or to, you know, wherever distribute across the world. So places like Bangladesh and Vietnam and all these poor places that are just being, you know, exploited. Bangladesh is the new China.
Yeah.
Right? So, but it's interesting to see that these fancy schmancy brands are having things manufactured in China now.
I had this lady come in when I worked at Helly Hansen. And Helly Hansen is a pretty, I mean, it's not a super, super high-end, but it's a pretty specialized Norwegian outdoor brand.
Beautiful, technical, high-performance.
High-performance, meant to last. They have a warranty on their
they
stuff.
They look great.
Forever. Yep. They have, if it has Helly Hansen on it, they will give it a life, it has a lifetime guarantee.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But I had this guy come in and he was looking for a jacket or something for his daughter for a gift. And she is vegan, which fine. I don't.
Yep. Whatever. Go for it. Yeah. Whatever, man.
So it couldn't have any
down or anything. Maybe
it couldn't have any animal, anything anywhere on it. Which
no leather.
I'm against. Like especially when you're looking at clothing, I'm not for that. But that's another podcast.
Yep.
But it couldn't have anything kind of animal related. So no down. It couldn't. I forget what our other stipulation was, like no leather trim or anything like that, obviously. Yeah. But it also, for her own rules, couldn't come from China. And I was like,
good luck with that.
And also, China's not so bad anymore.
Yeah, like China's kind of doing good wrong. In the grand
this
scheme
is a
of things.
Reputable brand. Like maybe cross like probably Cambodia and maybe Bangladesh off your list.
Yeah.
But China's actually not so bad when you're at a brand level that is this, you know, level of high-end craftsmanship and quality that where they have a lifetime guarantee on their stuff, like, China's okay.
Yeah, maybe want to redo some research maybe and do rethink some, your parameters a little bit.
Maybe
yeah.
15, 20 years ago, that would be another story.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so it's interesting to sort of see how that trains out. The other thing that we wanted to really quickly talk about, which we'll just touch base on ever so briefly, was when we were talking about these H&M brands and stuff and the crossovers that they do.
Yes, yeah, so they try to they crossovers these, with
faux luxury collections at a non-luxury price point.
Yeah, yeah so I've actually never bought any of
this. They're
stuff,
more expensive than the H&M stuff, but so they're like, nowhere
what's an example?
Near as expensive.
Did Versace do one?
Yeah. Margiela, Lanvin.
Lanvin did one, and that you would buy a dress for $300.
Yeah,
and it's a beautiful little cocktail dress, and it's better made and better materials than the H&M stuff, but it is certainly not Lanvin. But the design is there.
So it's an interesting crossover where you're buying stuff at a lower price point, a price point that you are probably more unfamiliar with if you shop at H&M all the time.
But you could make work.
But you could make
if
work.
If you needed to.
And because then it invites you to get clothing from a line that you would otherwise not be able to afford at all.
And they have, H&M hasn't done it in a while, but for a long time, every season, like twice a year, three times, they were churning them out.
And there was lines. Like,
oh my God,
down on the
people lining up for days.
And then, so I wonder what the quality actually is like. Like, I wonder if those pieces are made in the same places as the rest of the H&M.
I have quite a few pieces from where I have some Jimmy Choo H&M shoes, which I fucking love. The snakeskin Western shoe with a whole bunch of bedazzling on them.
Those are Jimmy Choo?
They're moderately hideous, but I fucking love them. Yes, the Jimmy Choo H&M. I have some Lanvin for H&M sunglasses because I loved them.
Yeah.
And then I have the Marnie for H&M. It's like a little dress, but it's a polyester dress. Yeah. Like it's not. But the thing is, it's a print. That's the part you pay for with Marnie, too, is like that's a very famous brand that it's a very weird, abstract, crazy color print. And I love it. And I think I even bought it on sale. Like, I think it was like $129 to begin with. And maybe I spent $50 on it because it was on sale. It was on one of the leftover racks.
But it's an interesting sort of dissection of luxury and fast fashion. It's a really super fucking smart move.
Sure.
For both
sides. Absolutely.
Both people are going to, like, both brands are going to benefit.
Absolutely.
For sure. And it's a way to introduce you know, an H&M customer to a Lanvin brand in a way that will build brand loyalty.
Yes, and that they can control.
Yes.
It's not just Zara ripping them off.
Yes, which also happens.
Which also happens constantly. Every goddamn day.
That's their whole business
that's
model.
That's their whole thing. So that's it's nice that they, it's nice for the bigger brand, for the luxury side of it, because they have a say and they can control it. And then the H&M gets that prestige and that association and that, you know, Karl Lagerfeld did a collection and, you know, there's, yeah, Versace did one and Balmain did one. And
yeah, there's been quite a few.
There's been quite a few. And they always sell out immediately.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
single one of them.
Margiela did one too.
Oh, and you yeah. can also then go, like, I think lots of times people will go and buy stuff and keep it for themselves, but lots of people will go and
I bought my sunglasses online because I wasn't fucking waiting in line for the sunglasses. And the sunglasses were $20
yeah.
in the store. And I think I paid like 60 for them, worth every penny to not stand in line. And 60 bucks for a pair of sunglasses. They're great sunglasses. They're not cheap. They're not like dollar store ones. They're better than the other H&M ones. It's like 6 years later. No, not maybe not even. Maybe 5 years later. I still wear them. They're still in the same condition. $60. Worth the I justified the $60 by not having to wait in line in November outside.
And you've had and them for 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And getting them.
Well, that's good.
So
that's cool.
I don't do it for all of them, but there was a couple. And like the Jimmy Choo shoes I bought used. A lady bought them and then wore them a few times and realized she didn't want them or whatever. So I bought them at like another discount price. The Marnie dress I bought on sale.
So you're doing pretty good.
I'm doing pretty good.
Not so shabby over here.
No, I do like a sale.
True.
And I also don't mind waiting for what I want.
Yes, that's a big part of it too.
And that's the thing. Like, well, I know what I want.
As long
and
as it's
I
not outside in November.
Yeah, exactly. I have limits.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I think we can end it here for this part of the discussion. We're going to take a little break. And then come back and see what's rattling around inside our brains for our obsessions.
And we're back.
I was waiting for you to decide who was going to say it. So you both did.
I was waiting for you to do it. Did it shut off?
Oh,
did
no. We got too excited.
We're funny.
We blew out with the sign. The thingamabobs on the doodly boop. I'm really on top of the technical aspects of this show.
Thank God you are, because I have no idea what's going on over there.
I know what buttons to push and I know what buttons not to push.
That's good. That's really
all you
need
to know. Yes, exactly.
Words to live by, really.
Yes, exactly. Oh, so we're back.
And time now for some obsessions.
We can wrap it all up with our obsessions for this week. Who would like to start?
I'll start.
Go for it.
I have been kept awake at night for some time trying to get a logo to come to me. I'm starting this little project that I'll be able to
speak about when it turns out
it's not a thing yet. It's nothing.
Sure,
yet.
Yeah. It's still just an idea.
Bunch of ideas.
Yep.
But part of that idea involves getting a logo. And I don't
branding
know
or something. Sure,
I feel like once I have it, I can.
It's gonna be great.
Everything
be a
can
catalyst
kind of fall into
for
place.
A whole bunch of things. Yeah,
but I need it for like an Instagram and getting business cards
hang
or getting
tag.
A hang. Like all of those pieces need to come from this first step.
Yes, this initial.
And it's really hard to nail down, and it's really tough to sort of see, like some people, I guess, would probably have an idea like right away what they want it to look like. And I don't.
Yeah.
I have lots of ideas of what I don't want it to look like.
Which is important.
So I've done.
Not necessarily helpful.
Not helpful. Not helpful when I am asking people for help on it.
Sure. Actually, like designers to actually create a thing for you.
So my partner and I have talked to a bunch of other really cool creative people that we know
And respect and
and love their work and everything. A couple of pals that we actually went to fashion school with who did the graphic design program. I met with them a couple of weeks ago and I was like, hi, we need a logo. Here's our idea. Here's sort of the direction that we're going. And here's sort of our, you know, brand, you know, mantra or whatever. And they're like, okay, cool. This is not enough.
Sure.
They're like, you need to tighten this up because there's not enough. You haven't given us enough information to actually do anything with. She's like, our biggest, like the biggest the biggest sort of obstacle for graphic designers is this exact problem. It's like when you go to them and say, here's my idea. I'm really excited about it. I can't actually articulate what it is. So like you do that for
me. Figure it out. I'll let you know if I hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is not nice.
No.
Like it's, and I, it didn't really occur to me that how, obviously how much work it would involve on their end because now I'm doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I have to do all of this research, which is, don't get me wrong, super fucking fun. Yeah. It's my favorite part. But it's still like finding a logo is such a stamp. Like it's such an important part of the brand.
And so much has to be said with it.
Yeah. So when
it's not just, it doesn't have to be just pretty. It has to, you know,
reflect your whole kind of branding.
The feeling,
yeah.
The brand, the
customer.
Yeah, the customer, the price point. Do you want it to look fun? Do you want it to look expensive? Do you want it to look artisanal?
Crafty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or do you want it to look like everything else that's on the market right now, which there's a lot of very similar stuff happening.
Yeah.
So it's been...
You got to think of the name, which is... And that's a thing, too. Like, part of the logo, too, is choosing a name. And I know I'm terrible at choosing names for things. But choosing a name too, like there's the name thing also goes in waves too. Like there's a lot of, it could be trendy to do a name in a sort of way and you want to stay away from that or you want to play into that and then translate that into a physical representation. Yeah.
And then does the name actually match to play into the logo? Like that doesn't always
exactly. Do you just want like a cloud or do you want the words?
Yeah.
Or do you want...
So we have a name. Like our name is... I'm stoked about our name actually. But then I like...
Oh, I was so excited for a second. I was like, what's the name?
Oh, do you want me to tell you?
No. Keep it to yourself.
I'll tell you guys later because it's not a thing yet. So I don't...
Y'all aren't privy to this information. Just hold on.
Since we have it, it's registered as a business already. So I already own it. So don't... No one's going to steal it or share.
I don't own my name.
Oh, get on that.
Get on that.
Which is scary.
Get on that before this podcast comes out. It doesn't take a lot of
paperwork. Before someone snatches it.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to do.
I can't imagine. It's so...
It's really hard. And so my obsession isn't really like a concrete thing, but it's like...
Just this process.
It's just this weird process of like, how do I take this whole grand idea of a business...
And dream and...
And all of the things that we want it to look like... And turn into one easy, recognizable,
bite-sized
little cookie.
Yeah, that you can put on a business card.
So I'm the good news is I've done
a hang tag or a garment tag or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've done lots of research and it's been super fun. And it's a pretty
you're circling.
Yeah,
you're
circling. We're circling. So I have more information now.
Getting closer to the center, but
yeah. So and I have a couple sort of mock-ups that are like getting there.
Yeah.
But my hat is off to graphic designers who have to.
Oh my God, when you see a good logo, man.
Like me. Like, I'm not a good client because I was like, I don't know how to do stuff.
There's a blog where it's just a bunch of graphic designers telling stories.
Designers a day. Oh no, I'm thinking of a different one.
Is it Clients from Hell or Customers from Hell? I forget what it's called, but it's just a bunch of graphic designers and IT people doing with things like the gray is too gray. Or that exact type of thing. You're just these poor graphic designers.
We want it to look like
dealing.
This, but it can't look like that.
Yeah,
because we don't want to get sued.
Yeah, but it has to
we want it to look
like
the Dior logo, but like not.
Yeah. So these poor graphic designers that are left holding the bag and having to figure this out.
Yeah, like you know, have you ever heard of the Nike swoosh? Like something like that.
Like the feeling of that, like not that
feeling,
you know.
Like the, you know, like the years of history that has encompassed. We want something like that.
The blue, the beauty and the simplicity. Yes. And perfection. That.
Yeah.
And I have $200.
Yeah. So you can have 35 of it.
That's my budget for the month. So you can have $25.
So it's been knocking around my brain, keeping me up at night. So
It's a true obsession.
To all of those graphic designers and to anyone else who has had to start a business or a project where you have to figure that part out, it's hard.
It's rough.
You're not alone. And be nice to your graphic designers because they know things that you don't know.
And you need them.
You need them.
Oh, you need their skills so much.
Yeah. You might not think so, but you do.
Yeah. Invaluable.
You can tell.
Pay your designers.
Yes. Yes.
What are you obsessed with, Abby?
Two things. One very quick thing. I bought a hat a few months ago, and it's the fucking best. It's so great.
Is it the gray one?
Every day.
With the
gray wool hat with the brim. I had hats and I wore glasses and I hate the rain on my glasses. Fucking hate it. And it rains all the time here.
Yeah.
And I don't have, especially now with the kid to lug around, I don't have a fucking hand for an umbrella.
No.
So I can't, I don't have an umbrella when I'm running around and doing stuff. And also, I don't have time to do my hair. So there's that part. And my choices were a toque, or for the Americans, like, what do they call it? A beanie?
A beanie.
Yeah. Like a knit hat or a baseball cap. Neither of which is very...
I can't imagine you in a baseball cap at all.
I have one. I feel ridiculous in it. I feel like everybody's going like, ooh, that says Malone on her head every time I leave the house in it. Even when, like, I'm go running and I have a baseball cap and I feel like a fucking idiot when I'm wearing it. But... It has a
just
brim,
recently,
and it's great. Yes, you had a baseball cap.
I do a baseball cap now.
But it's like a basic black.
Yeah, and it needs to have a very specific shape on the front.
Exactly.
Or else it looks stupid on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I have a very high forehead.
I totally get you. So I'm like, I feel like a fucking asshole in both of these options. And like, you don't always wear one a toque all the time. I like a wool cap. Like, it's Vancouver. It was like 14 degrees here today. I don't want to fucking wear a hat.
Like, you don't want to have
wool
hat. Weird smelling hair.
Exactly. Or weird gross hat head.
Yeah.
So I was looking around, and Katie, you actually, in the picture of us at Evan's show, you have that amazing hat.
That's a good hat.
Great on you. So I was looking for something like that, and I kept trying these hats on, and I kept trying like the same style of hat on and keeping not liking it, not realizing that I'm just trying the exact same hat on again and again and being surprised that I don't like it.
Oh, that's weird.
Weird. And also trying to, you know, looking at prices of things and trying to like, fuck, you know, like $100-something for a hat, and I couldn't pull the trigger, and then... As much as we preach about not liking fast fashion, I went to H&M and I found a really nice one in the H&M men's department. And it's just a wool gray hat with a wide brim that's a little bit floppy. I wear that fucker every day.
It's cute.
Every day I wear it.
And it's a natural fabric. It's a wool.
It's a wool. I'm okay. It's not like I'm wearing a bunch of polyester or fake fur or something gross on my head. So that's my obsession. I was trying to think of something today. I literally wear it every day. In the sun, it's great. In the rain, it's great. It's wonderful. And
then
I don't have
color,
to do my hair. It's great. Yeah, great. It goes with everything. Goes with the brown, goes with the black, goes with the blue, everything. But then the other thing that I've been assessing about is, again, I'm going to toot my horn about the M2M Apple TV channel. Amazing stuff. I found this documentary called The Man Who Shot Beautiful Women. And it was about fashion photographer who did a bunch of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar covers in the 40s and 50s. And I'm, after looking at the images, thinking like, oh shit, I've seen that. Very iconic, very specific. There's a very famous, I think it's a Vogue cover. It's a white cover with one eye. It's got a big blue eyeshadow and a big cat eye and a red lip and a nostril. And it's totally like blown out. So you don't see any definition on the face. And the lady's kind of looking down her nose. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, they did like a version
and
of that
it's
in
been
Funny Face.
Yeah. And it's been redone a bunch and bunch because it's so iconic. And then again, looking at a whole bunch of other things he did. There's this one he did where it's kind of blown out. There's no definition to the rest of the lady's head, but you just see her face. And it's the brim of a hat casting a shadow on her face. And she's like super chic and beautifully made up. And the hat gives a very vaguely military-ish type of hat shape.
Oh, yeah.
And it was during the war. So it was very of the moment. And this documentary about this super fascinating photographer called Erwin Blumenfeld, who was I can't remember if he was Dutch or German, European guy, Jewish guy, fought in World War I, was totally like fucked up after World War I, as many young men were. He was super young. After that, became a super prominent Dadaist in the 20s. Artist and photographer, and met up with Man Ray and all these famous Dadaist artists back in the 20s. And then in the 30s came to New York after he got into like artistic photography and stuff. And then through Cecil Beaton, he photographed Cecil Beaton, who's a very famous, we mentioned him in the couture episode, I believe. He got him a whole bunch of jobs at American Vogue and Harper's Bazaar doing these amazing covers, iconic, beautiful, unlike anything ever seen. Beautiful stuff.
Why doesn't Vogue do stuff like that now?
Oh, God. Seriously, it's unbelievable.
Fucking Zoolander cover. Can we not?
We just not? And they all look the same. They look the same.
It's a gray background.
Thing.
It's someone in a boring dress and the stupid... No.
Anyway, let's go back to these days. Anyway, this Erwin Blumenfeld did amazing fashion stuff. He also did super
I'm just so mad.
He's not even listening to me anymore. Anyway, amazing stuff. He also had a super interesting personal life. He was married to this woman. They had some kids. And then later on in his life had an affair, but was very open. And they kind of like all lived together, him and his wife and his mistress. And then his mistress married his son. And then they had a family. And then they all lived together.
Weird.
Crazy shit. And then one
day.
You
have my attention again.
Yeah, Evan's back. And then he was with his, he had another affair later on with his assistant who was like 40 years younger than him or something ridiculous. And then one day he was getting old. And I think he had some sort of health problem and he didn't want to degenerate. Like he didn't want to be a sick person and he knew he had this problem. So in Rome, he ran up and down the Spanish Steps a bunch of times and gave himself a heart attack and killed himself.
Oh my God.
So it's crazy. And that's what the doc opens with, him killing himself on the Spanish Steps in
Jesus.
Rome. And then goes back into his whole life and stuff. Fascinating.
What is it called?
It's called The Man Who Shot Beautiful Women. I think it's like a BBC documentary or something. And it's on the M2M channel. I found an awesome ID article. We'll post the article itself, too, because the article is awesome. Tracking the legacy of Erwin Blumenfeld, The Man Who Shot Beautiful Women. Unbelievable stuff. On top of the artistic photography, he did a lot of self-portraits. He did a lot of weird, like in the 60s, he did a lot of weird color. Like he would have a sheet of color and then have a woman behind it. He like invented the fashion film.
Really?
Back in the day. Anyway, we'll link all to this information. As soon as I watch this, I'm like Googling furiously as I'm watching this. And then, for the next week or so, I'm just constantly his like Wikipedia page open and like clicking on every single reference at the bottom to see everything and anything I can from this guy. It was fascinating.
Sweet. I'm going to find it.
And yeah, it was interesting because it was super iconic stuff that you've seen. And then weird shit you have never seen. That's fantastic. So I'll find some cool shit for you guys to look at and some cool links and we'll post that on the blog for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you awesome. Two can become obsessed with Erwin Blumenfeld.
Oh, I wrote it down wrong.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes. I wrote it down wrong.
And Mr. Ducharme, what do you got?
I can't believe I haven't talked about this yet. It's such a big moment in fashion. And I'm not being sarcastic.
You're not being dramatic.
I'm being dramatic now.
Oh my God, I can't believe I haven't talked about it.
But our darling Grace Coddington is stepping down as creative director.
Oh, 30 years. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she is going to assume the role of creative director at large and will take on additional projects outside of the magazine, which is very exciting.
That is good.
That's exciting. Because she'll still want to do stuff at Vogue. Like, she'll still do some editorials every once in a while. But
in this Business of Fashion article, it says a spokesperson for American Vogue confirmed she will work on several Vogue fashion shoots throughout the year.
Oh, good.
So we'll still get a good...
Her stuff was exciting.
It was the best.
And weird.
It was the best.
Yeah.
She's so weird. I love it.
It's not the Vogue stuff that we just talked shit about 4 minutes ago.
Yeah. No, it's
the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's the cool stuff with cool people and crazy outfits and interesting backgrounds.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the September issue, she's the best.
Watch the September issue. Oh, my God.
Okay, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen the September issue...
You'll need to get your shit together. Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing it backwards.
Ow. My leg. Yes. Go watch this September.
Watch it.
And if you don't fall in love with Grace Coddington, you're dead inside.
Yeah. Unsubscribe because we don't want you near us.
We don't want to be associated with you.
No. But yeah, so
On the one hand, that's a bummer. But on the other hand,
I'm excited to see because...
Because she's older. She's in her 70s. But she's still so... full of life and ideas. Like her creativity knows no bounds.
Exactly.
Have you read her book?
It's yes, I have upstairs. Yeah. It's fabulous. Obsessed. Another so thing,
another
Grace,
obsession.
A memoir, a fabulous book. And it's one of those books that has a bunch of pictures in the middle of all her personal pictures of her and pictures of all these editorials. Like I remember like looking at Vogue magazine in the 90s when I was a kid and didn't know shit about shit and just being like,
what?
Yeah.
It's like her and like, Jean Shrimpton and Angelica Houston in 1971 at Manolo Blahnik's house.
Yeah, Studio 54, hanging out.
It's so great.
Yeah, and super hip, posh parts of London. Anyway, so, Grace.
Yeah, what's really exciting is because she's going to be represented under the umbrella of this company called Great Bowery. And they're like her agency. So they're going to be her agents and they're
and
going
find
to
awesome find opportunities
awesome projects for her.
Yeah.
Do you think she'll come on the podcast?
Should we contact them?
Should we
should get Ashley to send
please,
them.
Please, next please, time please, you're in please, Vancouver. Please.
Yeah. Well, there's Skype.
Yeah.
That's true.
Can you be a Skype guest on our podcast? It'd be really funny if it actually happened, though.
That'd be a dream come true.
I'm good.
What would we even say?
What would we say? Like, we would we're just going to sit here and you can talk for an hour and a half.
She'll love that.
No.
We'll just be like,
yeah, literally. Yeah, she's so cute. She said, I didn't want to be pigeonholed into just styling a shoot. I wanted to do something beyond. I approached them and they were willing to help me on all sorts of aspects. They're thinking up ideas for me, which is fun.
Yeah. She's so great.
She's just so cute.
I love her.
We love
and
cute.
And so
here.
Like, and like not...
Not
she's the
fashion-y.
Opposite of that fashion ego, you know.
That stereotype of the fashion.
Fashion editor. She's not Devil Wears Prada or anything. Like, she's the opposite. She's sweet and genius and soft-spoken and, yeah.
And also, like, kind of a badass, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Pretty bad.
She knows what the fuck she wants.
Yeah, she's cool.
And she's allowed because so cool. She's Grace motherfucking Coddington.
Bow down.
Also the most British name in the universe.
Literally.
I love it. Pretty great. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good Lord. Obsession. I forgot we haven't even talked about that.
Yeah. I know.
Huh. Big news.
But I just can't get that off my brain. I'm excited to see what she does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You just gotta wait around and I'll see what happens.
So exciting.
Ooh. Alrighty, I think we're gonna wrap this up, put a little pin in it, and
yeah,
we will
call
be
it a night.
Back in a couple of weeks.
So yeah, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear about you. Do you think luxury's bullshit? Do you think it's fucking ridiculous? Are you into it? Are there parts of it that you're more curious about? Were we...
Did we miss it completely?
Yeah, did we? I think we kind of know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But we're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, fashionhags@gmail.com. Shoot us an email.
We love it.
We would love to hear from you.
Any suggestions that you guys have as well for episodes, stuff that you guys want to hear about? We're totally open to that.
Very
as well.
Open to that sort of thing. We want to make shows that people want to listen to. So tell us what you want to listen to that either you know something about or that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, we're into it.
We are super into it.
Follow us on Instagram, share us around, and write us a review. We love that. It's awesome. It actually does really good things for us for getting exposure on iTunes. So share us around.
On top of making us feel super awesome.
Yeah.
And it feels great.
Gives us the warm fuzzies.
We have a big group hug after the end of every podcast.
Yeah.
After a pee break, because we're back to evening recording and we've had some booze, so we have to go pee again.
All right, guys.
Well, this has been the Fashion Hags.
Thanks so much for listening.
And we love you.
But we love fashion more.
Bye. Fashion. Hey.